Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is another lovely, beautiful evening here in downtown Sherman Oaks, California. This is The Writer's Block, and you're listening to LA Talk Radio. I am Jim Christina, your host, in the studio tonight with the lovely, charming, effervescent, and always fun Bobby Jean Bell. Give us a giggle. There you go. And, of course, her husband Jim is in studio with us tonight. Good evening, Jim. We missed you last week.
Well, last week was Thanksgiving.
No.
Oh,
wait a minute. Yes, it was.
And
week
I missed you too. Yes, in the week before.
And we had such a delightful guest.
Oh, it was a wonderful show.
The Rochelle podcast was great. Fields. Oh, my gosh. She was just tremendous.
Yeah. And you and Russ just, you know, you're great.
We had a ball with her. We had a great time with her.
Wonderful.
And, you know, our deal here at the Writer's Block is to make them feel comfortable when they're in the building. And you know, even when they're on the phone, like tonight's guest. And it was just being with Russ is always fun. It's like being with you is always fun. So it's a little bit different. You know, it's a little different vibe going on, but, you know, always fun. And Rochelle was just a delight.
Mm-hmm.
She was just a delight to have on the show. And her son was sitting here the whole time.
That's right.
And he was just enthralled by the whole thing because I don't think he'd ever been. Well, he works in the industry. In fact, the bookie talked him into filling out a form he's a screenwriter.
Oh, great. Will he be on next year?
Yeah, sometime.
Oh, great.
Sometime. We have actually, you know, amazingly enough, we have a lot of new writers coming in next year. We also have a lot of returning writers next year.
And I have a bunch of people to get in the funnel.
Yeah, well.
Well, the year will be booked, and there we'll be.
Give them the bookie's email address. She's busily booking up through.
She's booked up through April already.
She is booked up through April. That's how much this show has taken off. So
we thank our listeners
tuning
in.
We do. And just so people know, the Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley, the nice folks at Black Dog. If you're a new writer or you want some information on how to take care of stuff, you can always give us a call. The number there is 805-795-3165. And by Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in New Hall. And that number is
661-347-9700. Go shopping at www.scvoutwest.com.
That is correct. And, of course, by Target Freight Management in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And Target Freight, we mention them every week. They have, like, the best full truckload service in the industry. If they can't do it for you, it can't get done.
I think Santa uses them.
I think Santa does use them. He actually uses both their, actually all three.
Probably.
Now because they have an additional small package. But they have the finest in the industry, and they get your freight there every time, on time, at rates that you need for your transportation costs to go lower and lower and lower. So call today at 844-653-7789. That would be for Target Freight TFM truckload service. And tell them you heard it on the Writer's Block, and maybe they'll have a little something extra for you. And while we're at it, if you're an LTL shipper, which is less than truckload, and as Jeannie Loicano says, she could probably mouth these words by heart now, you are probably looking for the best rates with the least hassle. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just a ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 888-653-1323. Or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. And as I said a little bit earlier, if Target can't do it for you, it can't get done. They also have their little small package system now, which they've affiliated themselves with FedEx.
Oh.
So, I mean, they are pretty much a one-stop shop if you're looking for a good carrier or looking for a good company to handle your freight. Okay, that being said, tonight's guest is in Phoenix, Arizona, or someplace in Arizona, 602 area code. If you want to talk to him tonight, the number here is 818-602-4929. Again, that is 818-602-4929. And I would like to give you a brief announcement about an April 22nd, 23rd. Is that right?
22nd and 23rd
is the Buckaroo Bookshop at the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival again this year.
Correct.
We're going to be having a lot bigger venue plus a stage.
A stage.
We're going to be doing readings. We're actually going to produce a small, maybe a half hour segment of the Writer's Block.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be having a lot of the authors that we've had on the air with us and been in the studio with us will be there, and you'll be able to talk to them. So if you like talking to authors personally, one-on-one, man, come by the Buckaroo Bookshop because they are a ton of them there. And they, well, we all love talking to people.
Yeah.
We really do.
It's going to be really fun. And we also kick off the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival on Wednesday night, April 19th, with a fabulous concert celebrating the written word and the songs of the West with award-winning singer Mary Kay and storyteller poet Joe Harrington.
And we actually have them booked.
Yeah, they're going to be
the,
with us.
I believe the 13th of April. So they will be on the show. Mary Kay, of course, will be on phone, and Joe will be in studio.
Right.
We had Joe last year, and he's such a wonderful guest. He's such a wonderful guest. Great storyteller. So he's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So make sure we don't miss that. And check our websites. Check our West website a lot because they have the upcoming guests. Coming up next year.
Yep.
And this is our, we only have two more shows after this.
I can't believe it, Jim.
And then we're done for the year. And it's amazing to me that we have actually come this far with this show.
Yeah.
I had Sam the other day. I said, you know, Sam, I said, we could use some of our numbers to find out how we are. And I said, you know, so we can pat ourselves in the back or hang our head in shame. And he wrote me back really fast and he goes, never hang your head in shame. You guys have an outstanding radio show.
Well, we really, again, appreciate our listeners, our readers and writers for supporting the show.
We do. And for those new writers that try to get on, be patient. The bookie is booking solid, and she is going all the time. And I hear her in her office mumbling and swearing. And
we love you, bookie.
Next week, real quick, December 8th is our last live guest show, and that will be an author in Michigan. We're going to be talking to her while she's in Florida. Her name is Maris Soule. She's written several books, 25 romance novels and 4 mysteries and some short stories, and she's just very prolific. And she will be on with us next week. The week after is our annual Christmas show. I can say that now because we've already surpassed the first one. So this is our second one, so it's our annual Christmas show with the entire Writer's Block crew will be here in studio. That's always fun because you never know what's going to come out of Russ's mouth, much less mine. Okay, getting to tonight's guest, we have a gentleman named Michael Sprenkel. And Michael, this is a very short bio. This is what Michael sent us for his bio, and we're going to be asking a lot of questions about this. He is a graduate of Penn State University with a BA in film. He has worked in the technology area for the past 25 years, as well as being a bit writer for major motion pictures and television shows, and has worked for some of the largest studios in Hollywood. That's all he says about himself. His novels include Once Upon a Time in New York, How I Painted My Masterpiece, Love and Theft, and his current project, which was released just on the 16th of November this year, which is The Killing Spring, which is the book I read. And I have to tell you, we're going to be talking to Michael about this. He's got some questions to answer. So, that being said, let's bring Michael in. Michael, are you with us?
I'm with you.
All righty. Was that okay? Did you know, this is why we ask you to write your bio, because we read it.
Yeah, that's fine. Thanks. At least somebody reads my stuff.
Oh, we do.
Well, and I think I'm beginning to learn that your books are your bio, too.
Could be. You never know.
As I said at the top, that I did read The Killing Spring, and I got, and we're, without giving anything away, because it is a new book, it's actually a fairly short read. But it's so full of stuff. I don't know. You must have just opened the cover of that book and just started dumping stuff in there, because it's got one of everything. And I have to ask you, I mean, personally, I mean, I don't know you. We're sitting here naked. I don't know what you are doing right now. But what's with the cats? My God, you've got dead cats all over this book.
Well, to be honest with you, I've had cats throughout my entire life. And, you know, when they're small kittens, they're lovable and adorable. And the older they get, the more they start to terrorize you. And so, you know, I guess, you know, when I was putting together the book, everybody, you know, when you create a character, you try in your book, if it's a bad character or an evil character, to find a way to finish them off.
Right.
And, you know, I had gone through some things with my cat, you know, with her behavior and scratching things and ruining carpets and things like that. So I decided in the book to just do away with them.
Well, you did. Their heads wound up everywhere.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, and you know, the more I wrote, the easier it became, and it just after a while it became, I guess you could say a habit, maybe.
Well, I mean, you turn the page and there's a Buick with a cat on a hood ornament.
So wait a minute. Can we just back up a second here? Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Why don't you just take a moment and tell us a little bit about, since we've started with A Killing Spring, which is the newest book, why don't you just tell us a little bit about the book before we get into some of the specifics about the book? set it up for us a little bit.
Sure. Well, it's pretty much as I describe in the book. I had a very close friend, Rick Cherry is his name, and he's actually a character in the book.
Yeah.
But back at Penn State, we were going to school together, and we were friends. And, you know, after we graduated, we went our separate ways. I moved to New York City and lived there a number of years, and he moved to Philadelphia. And we completely lost contact. And then, you know, down the road, like 30 years later, we reconnected. And so we, you know, I had already started a book that, you know, was going to take place during Hurricane Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was explaining that to him, and, you know, he suggested, you know, well, why don't we throw in some of the people that we knew back at Penn State, make them characters, and, you know, it just grew from there. You know, so I kind of created a book that's really a psychological study as much as it is a novel, in my mind anyway. You know, I figured that everyone has monsters hidden inside of them, things that, you know, they do or have done that they're not proud of, and so on. And, you know, I tried to emphasize with that and with the characters in the book, and then, you know, as I progress with the book, to allow them to let those inner monsters loose.
Mm.
Well, you done good.
Like Katrina let loose.
You know, it was amazing, and I thought it was just brilliant the way you mixed the mystery of the object found in the cereal box. I won't say what it was, with the oncoming Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was really well done, because now we not only have one thing that we got to worry about, now we got two.
Yeah.
And they're constantly looking out the window at the wind and the rain, and, you know, these guys, and, you know, of course, Dick Cherry is one of the main characters, and Michael Malone, which I understand is actually you.
Yeah, it is.
Which makes me kind of wonder, because, Oh, incidentally, I caught you. Camaros don't have hood ornaments.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. A little
artistic license.
I guess you might call it one of the many twists on reality.
There you go.
Now, now Michael Malone is also in the first book, Love and Theft.
Is it? He is.
Is it the same character, or did you just name, you know, like that name, and so?
It's actually me interjecting myself into my books. And my father, who passed away shortly after 9/11, his name was Malin. And a lot of people nicknamed him Malone. And so I kind of do it as a way to, he passed away before he had a chance to read any of my books, anything that was published for sure. And it's kind of a way for me to honor him and, you know, use his nickname as my character in the books.
Well, you certainly, you integrated everything really well, very well. If I may take a moment of your time and ask you what it is that you do for a day job?
I'm in corporate sales, and I work for U-Haul International.
Oh, big
and,
company.
And what I do is basically contact corporations that would have a large need for rental equipment, mm-hmm. and then set up contracts with them. A good example would be someone like FedEx or UPS,
sure.
who during the holiday season they might rent 25,000 pieces of equipment from us.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I get that. Okay.
Yeah,
I was just kind of curious, just because you know you were a screenwriter and everything else, and now you're corporate sales.
Well,
yeah.
I wondered.
Well,
if...
it's a short lifespan in the Hollywood world.
Yeah, I'll bet.
I know that some of our listeners who are authors really love to hear from authors about how you generate income, whether you're able to be a full-time writer. And there's enough work that you're able to get, or whether you have to, have some other source of income coming through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like, I think most of us that are writers, and I include myself in there, we don't write because we're going to get a paycheck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
If we see one, everybody's elated and they jump up and down and they share. But most of us don't ever see one. If we do, it's like, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 bucks,
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully a little bit better than that. But,
yeah, hopefully. But.
Yeah, so you certainly can't do it to, with any aspiration of, hey, I'm going to write a book and get rich, because
right.
it just doesn't work that way.
It doesn't.
Now, Love and Theft has been entered for a 2016 Pulitzer. Is that right?
It was. It wasn't even mentioned. It didn't get a Pulitzer, obviously, but it was in there, and it gives me a little satisfaction that at least someone like the Pulitzer committee would read something that I'd written, but. I don't write to be honest with you, to win contests or anything. So it was just something that's, somewhat, I guess I could say something to be proud of. But I just write because I like to and I have to.
Well, I mean, you were in the same same genre, not genre, but you were the same list of people as Bob Dylan, who actually did win the Pulitzer.
Hey, he's one of my favorites.
Oh, he's my hero.
Yeah.
Oh, totally.
What question do you wish that somebody would ask you about your books that you've never been asked?
Boy, that's an interesting question. What I think any author really likes to hear is, where can I get it? And how soon is it going to be out?
Right.
I mean, something that, builds a little bit of excitement and, makes me feel that, I've spent my time creating something that somebody is going to, you know, actually want to read. So other than that, I don't know. I'm stunned on that question.
You know, I've got your phone is bouncing all over the place. I'm wondering if it's our connection.
I wonder, too, because it's kind of
wavering. It to you? Is your voice wavering and wobbling all over?
Not really. I kind of read you loud and clear.
Oh, okay. Well, you are with us. So I'm going to hang up, and I'm going to recall you, if you wouldn't mind. And see, see if we can get a better connection.
Okay.
All right.
So I should hang up as well, right?
I would hope so. Otherwise, we're going to get a busy signal.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Bobby and I will spend the next 40 minutes talking to ourselves. Okay.
Okay.
We're going to be... Okay, gone.
Oh, what fun.
It is to ride.
The one-horse open sleigh.
Hey. Okay, 602-493. I think that's the number. Let's try it. Yep, 0658.
Yeah, there was kind of an echo.
It was bouncing.
Wavering.
Modulating, wavy, I guess, is the right the radio word for it.
Is it ringing?
I'm here.
Okay,
good.
Then.
Oh, that's better.
Oh, much better.
Oh, yeah, I can tell.
You're not modulating all over
good.
The place. We're
that's
missing
good.
Words, and I think that's, you know, we figure we better get it taken care of before we have 2 minutes left in the show.
Okie dokie.
So when you write, what okay, apparently and obviously, Love and Theft and what is it? Wait a minute. I'll get it. The Killing Spring. Have pretty much like the same people in it. So I'm not too sure whether I want to say that The Killing Spring is a continuation of Love and Theft or just a different story altogether, because it certainly has a different ending.
That's a good question.
And the characters in Love and Theft, I mean, we can go down and there's, you know, Dick Cherry and Mickey Malone and is it Brillinger? Is that Brillinger?
Yeah, Brillinger. Uh-huh.
Brillinger and Stabile?
Uh-huh.
Okay. He's a sickie. Well, actually, so is Brillinger.
Where do these live in your mind?
I know, and so that was going to be the question as well. Where did these people come from? Which dark recesses of your brain after incredibly heavy drug usage did these
like
people
a really
come
nice
from?
Guy.
I know,
you know?
Huh?
Well, actually, all these guys exist. And, you know, of course, in the book, there's so much fiction thrown at their characters.
Sure.
But, for example, Brillinger, there is a segment in the book, not to spoil it too much for everyone, but where he does cut the head off of a cat.
Right.
And, you know, back in the day at Penn State, for a while, there actually was a rumor floating around campus that he had actually done that. And, you know, so we used to tease him about it, you know, some 30-some years ago or whatever. And so I just, you know, kind of took little pieces of these real people. And, you know, because I knew them and spent so much time with them, and then I, you know, just elaborated on things that they would do, you know, following the storyline and, you know, ways that they would behave and react and everything.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that's kind of how I did it. You know, I think most writers, they draw a lot from experience that they've had in their own lives.
Sure.
And, you know, they fit it into their storyline, which can be either good or bad, you know, for the person they're writing about.
So I have to ask, because, I mean, you know, I would hate for you to use my name and not let me know that I'm a serial killer.
Well, we know that about you, Jim.
I know. Do they know that they're in these books and they're actually, like, really sick people?
No, they're...
Oh, good.
You know, everything has changed around, so it's just, you know, the actual... I guess the vision of them in my mind is what survives.
Oh, okay, so we haven't informed them. In fact, we're just using names at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we don't really know for sure if they are serial killers or not.
Yeah, well, you don't even know for sure if it's a true story.
Exactly.
Well, that was going to be one of my next comments.
Now,
because of the ending, but I'm not going to give that away.
I want to ask a question about the book covers. Because on your Facebook page, I can see that there were other possible book covers for The Killing Spring. And the book cover that is on it now is kind of cartoon-like sort of illustration. Mm-hmm. And it seems sort of lighthearted and kind of comedy. And you do tell us right in the preface, you warn us that we're going to probably have dealing with some grotesque shocks one after another. So we already know it's not really like the cover.
Right. Each one a little worse than the one before it.
Can you tell us a little bit about cover selection for your books?
Yeah. In the Killing Spring, I was tossing around a lot of different ideas. And the reason that what I did was I created a cover that gave a vintage postcard look.
Ah.
And without giving too much of the book away, because I do want people to read it, there is a chapter in the book that deals with postcards and letters and things of that nature. That you know, really ties into the story nicely.
Got it.
And you know, everything that's on the cover also is mentioned in you know, some parts in elaborate detail.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that, you know, the story, when it was done, it had kind of a vintage feel to it almost. I thought, you know, hey, a vintage postcard, that's going to be nice for this one. When Love and Theft, I had a friend, her name is Kelly Berg. She's really working hard at becoming an artist. And she did the sketches for both the front and back cover of Love and Theft. When I saw her artwork, I just thought it was amazing, and I thought it's a hand holding a cigarette on the front cover, and a coffee cup on the back cover with cigarette butts in it, and that was pretty much the story for me of that book. Love and Theft was coffee and cigarettes. I mean, I labored for years putting that book together, and you know, smoked a lot of cigarettes and drank a lot of coffee while I was doing it, and just seemed to, you know, mesh right in with the storyline as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, the main character there, Michael Malone, is such an interesting fellow because he's a hacker. Oh, you take us on. I learned so much about history that I did not know, and I enjoy that. You know, his mind kind of begins to wander. He sees a Ford Mustang, I think, and next thing he's thinking about Henry Ford, and then he's thinking about World War II. And you left me with all kinds of things as a reader that I really didn't know about. A very interesting guy. Tell us a little bit about his art background.
Well, again, you know, that was me in interjecting myself into the story. And, you know, right after I graduated from Penn State and I moved to New York City, my first job in New York City was at Christie's auction house in their warehouse. And just like I have in the book, I was in charge of the third floor, which was old master paintings and contemporary art. And I was literally surrounded by art on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not talking, you know, small gallery artwork. But, you know, I'm talking about, you know, Van Gogh's and Picasso's and, you know, the real stuff.
Uh-huh.
And it was a great opportunity for me. I had taken a lot of art classes at Penn State, along with film classes, and you know, I thought I knew art, but when I was working at Christie's, it was a real eye-opener, and I really became to love it. It became a passion.
Well, you write about, I think they go to a museum and they look at Thomas Cole's, is it Thomas Cole's and the art series, that beautiful, and familiar with some of that art. And I felt like, you know, this is a writer that is really grounded in some really, such a wide array of knowledge on so many subjects. I'm enjoying that very much in your writing.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, it's something that you know, as a writer, you really should know in depth the subject matter that you're writing about, I think. Not so much that people, you know, that I feel people deserve good writing, because a lot of people don't. I mean, some people are very complacent with bad writing, and other people don't even read anymore. You know, they work all day and they come home and they're completely satisfied, you know, sitting in front of the TV and vegging out and watching The Voice or something. But, you know, it's something that, you know, I take pride in my work, usually no matter what it is. And when I'm writing, you know, a big part of the fun for me is the research that goes into it.
Well, all of the titles of the chapters also in Love and Theft you name for movies.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, that's very fun, because I began to, you know, read that title and go, Last of the Mohegans. Okay, what's he going to be telling us about in this chapter? You know,
Hawkeye.
Yeah, if you ever get a chance to go back and read it again, I don't just use the titles, but I incorporate something into the chapter from the movie itself. It could be a particular scene, it could be a particular line, or just a feel or geographic area, something like that. So it's I had a lot of fun with it. There's a lot of hidden tricks in that book.
You have an interesting take on The Wizard of Oz and how it speaks to a kind of on a larger canvas that I really enjoyed. Do you want to chat on that for just a moment for our Wizard of Oz fans? And, you know, what does the Cowardly Lion stands for, and the Tin Man? You know, it's just really interesting how you write about that.
Well, I mean, the whole premise, I think, of the Wizard of Oz is, you know, you have this girl, and she's going down the yellow brick road, and you know, in my mind, that's you know, streets are paved in gold, and she, you know, she's on a search for the wizard, and this is a guy that is a magician. He can make everything all right, but he pulls all the strings and all the levers from, like, behind a curtain.
Right.
But he's, you know, he's definitely the guy in control. And, you know, the people that she meets along the way, you know, I've often thought of, like, the Tin Man as, like, you know, he represents the industrialized world, the American worker. The factory worker, the machine of the industrial age, the Tin Man, or the Scarecrow. He's more of the farmer, the agriculturalist, and so on and so forth. I mean, to me, it's a story. Even the name itself, Oz. When you look at, like, the measurements of gold, For example, or silver, it's the troy ounce or OZ.
Right, is
the abbreviation.
Right.
So it's just it's kind of a different way of looking at the story. But I found that, and it's my favorite. I don't know if it's my favorite, but one of my favorite movies. And when I rewatch it in that context, I can just, you know, really reinforce my beliefs in a lot of ways that that's what the movie and the writer Baum, that's what he was trying to a message he was trying to get across.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know as a 10-year-old, reading The Wizard of Oz was a chore.
Mm-hmm.
It really was a chore, and yeah, I had found myself having to sit down and go back through chapters and go back and find out who this one person was and you find yourself going back and forth, and then the whole book is a big surprise when you actually find out who the wizard is.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
yeah, it's an amazing story. I think that
it's a great journey.
Yeah, like a lot of good writers, it was very much ahead of its time,
right,
and yet very, very much spot on for its time.
Go ahead.
Oh, do you have an agent? Do you use an agent?
I don't.
Okay.
You know, I've tried often in the past and came close a couple times, but... It just nothing that stuck.
Uh-huh.
And, uh-huh. You know, it's something that, you know, I aspire to doing in the future. And I'm going to work hard to do that because I think that's going to give me a lot more exposure.
Uh-huh.
And get noticed in areas that I'm certainly not being noticed now. But my main focus and my main concern is to just keep writing and, you know, cranking out books. You know, I figure my writing's not stellar, you know, and with... I just got a contract last week on a fourth book that I'm actually writing with Rick Cherry, and we have it finished. But I'm, you know, that'll be my fourth. But you know, I'm thinking with four books, you know, my odds aren't too good. But with 100, you know, odds are in my favor.
Oh sure, I mean, you know,
I'm just going to keep writing and putting my stuff out there. And I mean, I you know, let's face it, we writers, we don't do it unless we enjoy it.
Well, that's exactly right. And you know, that's one thing that we try to put across on this program. Is that if you don't absolutely enjoy it, don't do it, because you're not going to put out a good product.
Yeah, and you know, something that Bobby said too earlier about my art in Love and Theft and my art background, it carries over into writing, because I've actually painted as well. I have a couple paintings that I've done in my house.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the work, whether it's painting or writing, it really never, you know, matches my dream of perfection.
Sure.
You know, and a lot of times I think I'm finished, and then you know, a couple months later, I'll take the painting down off the wall and I'll redo an area or something or add something.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing happens with my books. But the good thing about now, you know, being published is that that's kind of the cutoff.
Mm-hmm.
I have to stop.
Right.
And, you know, once it's published, I just have to give it up and say, okay, my baby's been abducted or whatever,
right,
and just
right.
Move on to the next project. So
right.
that helps me out a lot.
You got a full-time job. What is your writing process like? When do you find time to write, and when do you sit down to write?
Well, I'm going to be absolutely upfront and honest with you.
Well, I hope so.
I write a lot in my head. For example, if I'm, you know, spending time with my wife watching television, In the living room, she'll be deeply involved in some, you know, love story movie that's on TV or something, and I'll just kind of be sitting there, and I'll be 1,000 miles away. You know, like in The Killing Spring, for example, I'll be there on, you know,
on the island
during, yeah, or, you know, during the hurricane.
Sure.
And, you know, when I'm driving to work, when I'm driving home from work, you know, I'm in a complete different world. So when I do sit down and write, it just flows out of me.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I already have the structure and the architecture of the story already done, and I just sit down and I put it on paper. Typically, I like to write very late. And when I say late, I mean, you know, get up out of bed at 1-2 in the morning and write. Also write a lot in the weekends, and pretty much any free time I have when I don't have other chores.
Sure.
Or anything.
Sure.
I try to write every day, you know, whether it's just a page or 20.
Sure, sure. I have a question for you, and I've never asked anybody this question before. So you're the first. You're my guinea pig.
I'm honored. I feel honored.
Well, you should, because this is a great question. As you're writing, do you ever put theme music with what you're writing to help you move a story along?
Theme music.
Yeah, like I write Westerns, so I mean there's tons of theme music out there. And as I'm going in certain sections of a Western, I'll think all of a sudden a piece of Silverado will pop into my head and fits it perfectly. So that's as I'm thinking, as I'm writing, that's what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking, oh wow, now we got to fit this to Silverado, or now I got to fit this to the Magnificent Seven, or write my own. I've never talked to another writer that said he put theme music to things in his head while he was doing it. So I just thought I'd ask.
Yeah, I wouldn't say theme music, but what I do, which is odd, is that I am a movie buff.
Okay.
And so sometimes when I'm writing, I'll have a movie on in the background, and it helps me to. Just kind of that dull chatter.
Right.
And I guess that old, you know, movie music in the background.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes. It helps to, you know, set a mood. Mood, I found, is very important when I write. I have to be mentally in the right place.
Sure.
And I guess I guess that's why they invented scotch.
That's why they invented Crown Royal.
Now the truth comes out.
I was telling one of the gals that worked for me today, I said, if you want to know what whiskey tasted like in the old West, Crown Royal was a label that was around. So take
was
a shot.
It really?
Yes, it was.
And
take a shot of Crown Royal, and you'll know exactly what the top shelf whiskeys tasted like in like Tombstone. Are you going to ask the question, Bobby?
Do you ever experience writer's block? And if so, what do you do about it?
Well, I'll tell you. I don't think there's any such thing as writer's block. I think that, in my mind. That's something invented by a lot of writers that either, you know, can't write, don't have inspiration, or haven't lived enough. I mean,
haven't lived enough is a good
that's
point.
That's a good point.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah.
That's an
excellent
point.
I think that I've had certainly my share of life experiences, and I'm constantly drawing upon them, and there's just so much going on in the world, and so many areas that haven't been explored, and so on, that I just, to be honest with you, I wish I had 24 hours a day I could write.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, your life experiences, amazingly enough, a lot of them include cats.
Yeah. We're back to cats.
We actually are going to be running out of time here pretty soon. So while we're still have a few minutes, why don't you tell our listeners where they can get a hold of you or where they can purchase your books? There's a question for you. Mm-hmm. Where can I buy your books?
Yeah.
Sure. Well, my books, of course, you can find them on Amazon, paperback or Kindle. You can find them at Barnes and Noble online. Also, the Touchpoint Press bookstore. And you can always find me. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. And anybody that wants to contact me, I hope you reach out. You know, if you have any questions, you know, hit me up on Facebook. I'm open to it.
We like it.
Also, if I could, before I go, I do want to mention that I have an upcoming book. It's going to be released in, 5 months now, actually. It's called The Ghost of Tom Mix. And it's my first that I co-wrote with Rick Cherry.
Okay.
And it's an amazing story about two guys that move into Tom Mix's house in Hollywood to write a screenplay for The Killing Spree. And a lot of things happen in it, and I think it's just an amazing story. And I want you guys to read it for sure.
Well, is it going to be out by April 22nd and April 23rd?
Well, let's see.
Maybe you need to make a trip over here and be with us at the Buckaroo Bookshop.
Oh, I think that's an outstanding idea.
You know, Tom Mix
is... Actually, I think it should be released by then.
Do you know, Tom...
to be honest with you.
Two of Tom Mix's dressing rooms are actually on Main Street in Old Town Newhall, a stone's throw away from the grounds of the festival. And they both have businesses in them, but that's part of the claim to fame in Old Town Newhall, are these two small spaces that were used by Tom Mix.
Well, it's kind of a claim to fame for me, too, because he actually grew up in DuBois, Pennsylvania, and that was about an hour away from where I grew up.
Wow.
In Pennsylvania.
Okay, I'll send you an email with some information.
Yeah, you know what? If you can make it out here for that weekend, that would be, like, totally awesome.
Oh, my gosh, that'd be so cool.
And I have to be honest, we have an absolute ball when we're there. We get more people stopping by and talking to us, and it's just a wonderful weekend. It truly, truly is. It truly is.
Yeah, and by then everyone should be over the election too. So
we're hoping they're getting over it now.
Oh.
Good Lord.
Moving on.
Okay, Michael, thanks for joining us tonight. It's been just a hoot having you. And keep writing. I mean, you do some good stuff, and it was an honor to read the killing spring. And
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I did, and we have to read a book a week, Bobby and I.
Sometimes
we have to read two, and so when I get one that grabs me and keeps my attention for as long as yours did, I applaud you. Because I'm not hypercritical, but I am kind of critical. Okay, I've got to run. We got to let you go. Thank you so much for joining us again. And you know what? I'm going to be sending you a coffee mug that says The Writer's Block on it. And so you can have more coffee.
Take a picture. Post it on Facebook.
We always like to have that.
Post it on our Facebook page for The Writer's Block Facebook page. Anything you're posting on your page, just come on over and post on our page, too.
Yeah, it's The Writer's Block Radio Show page. And find that and post it right there, and everybody can see it.
Okay, I will. Definitely.
And
thanks.
Thanks again, Michael, and enjoy the rest of your evening.
All right, you too. Thanks a lot.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys. Bye.
could not get rid of the wobble.
I know, but how fun.
I know. What a great guy. Man, if he could come out here, that would be totally awesome.
I had read on one of the, somewhere when I was researching for tonight, that he was working on a book called The Ghost of Tom Mixon. And I was like, oh, I wonder.
And he's only in Phoenix. It's only like 6 hours.
Yeah, so, well, we'll see. We'll put out the invite and we'll see.
December 8th, we have in the studio, or not in the studio, but we'll be talking to her. She'll be in, actually, Florida, and we'll be talking to Bobby Jean, who will be in Newhall.
Yes. I'll be calling
She'll be on the phone as well. Marisol, who is a prolific writer, as I said earlier, she is, her 25 romance novels have made it all over the place. I mean, she's got 25 romance novels. She's got 4 mysteries. And 2 short stories.
Well, I'll read something by next week.
Let's hope so. And I kind of like a little shout out to our listeners. And if you're going to be a guest on the Writer's Block, when you send the bookie PDFs of your book, please make sure that they're Windows based.
Mm-hmm.
We can't. A lot of us
we
can't
have
get
a,
the
yeah,
star
we have a hard
and
time and yeah,
yeah, and we can't open them. It looks like Chinese.
And we want to read.
And we really want to read your stuff. So yeah. I mean, unless you want us to sit here and be stupid. Well,
that's not to say we. Well, anyway,
yeah, we'll let that go. But anyway, we do appreciate you people, and next week we're looking forward to speaking with Maris, and of course the week after is our Christmas show, which everybody will come in and have a ball at, and then we're dark for 2 weeks. We'll be doing reruns of shows, and we'll start again January. Let's see, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th.
Can't
I believe
it.
We're back on the air January 5th. Okay, so thank you so much for joining us. Good night, Bobby.
Good night, Jim.
Good night, Jim. And we'll be catching you up next Thursday, 7 o'clock, right here on LA Talk Radio.